Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, January the 12th. Get your galoshes on and your wet ducks around you because it's going to be a wet one today. Joining us this morning, because he didn't want to go across Fernbridge this morning, yeah. Greg Foster. Yeah.
And we had a little earthquake this morning about 20 after 5.
So when you say little earthquake, what is a little earthquake in Ferndale?
You know, it said, I looked it up and said it was 4.4, but it was about 100 kilometers west of Petrolia, so it was out in the ocean. And here, I felt like one good jolt, and that was it. It didn't last, but, you know, that one big jolt.
Oh, so it just was kind of letting you, reminding you.
Yeah, exactly. I was actually surprised it was as large as 4.4. I thought it was smaller than that. I just happened to be awake, and this, like, you know, I have a 116-year-old two-story house, so it tends to groan and creak a bit when the ground shakes. So.
Well, that's what it's designed to do. So once again, it performed, right?
It definitely bends.
All righty. So ever wonder why it's an expression of contempt to say that someone's name is Mud? You should be able to, get this one. It's not that, this one's not that tough.
Well, I know mud is not particularly a good thing.
No. You're going the wrong, direction. It's not a thing. It's a who.
Oh, is it Dr. Mud from the Lincoln assassination?
Bingo.
All right.
All right. I get an assist on that one.
Hardcore Fenton Mud from Star Trek.
No. And it's not the mud they rub on baseballs either. From Pennsylvania. John Wilkes Booth, the man who assassinated Abraham Lincoln, fractured his leg while escaping from Ford's Theater. A country doctor who knew nothing of the assassination treated Booth and sent him on his way. Later, when the doctor realized whose leg he had treated, he notified the authorities and as a result was imprisoned as a co-conspirator. Later, the injustice was recognized and he was pardoned by President Andrew Johnson. The doctor's name was Samuel Mudd, and soon after the assassination, it became an expression of contempt to say that someone's name was Mud, double D. Over time, people forgot the origin of the expression, and double D became single D.
Ah.
There you go.
Fair enough. See, it was a single D that threw me off.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. So what's the update on the broadband? Are we going to get it here in the next week and a half?
I wouldn't say a week and a half, but there's, you know, a few exciting projects going on, both and so, you know, there's the big pipes. If people think about broadband as, you know, big pipes, which are like the big water mains that move, you know, between, say, municipalities, and then you have smaller, what some people call last mile, or the ones that bring you to your home. And there are some exciting projects out there. I think people know about the Trans-Pacific cable, and folks are moving forward with that. And then there's also folks who are interested in doing last mile and middle mile. Middle mile being between, say, Humboldt and the Central Valley on Highway 299. And the goal is to sort of keep making more robust the network here, both in terms of, resiliency and redundancy, so that we don't have any issues, and also to get service out to areas that aren't served very well, and then create the size of pipe, if you will, that's attractive to folks that might be doing higher-end data services and that sort of thing. And there is a company that's purchased a property that's interested in doing exactly that in Arcata. So these projects are all sort of moving forward. Connie Stewart up at Humboldt State is, and Sean over at Access Humboldt have been working hard on these projects. These are private company with some public support projects moving forward. It's really kind of exciting, you know, in the 20 years that I've been working on broadband issues to go from when we started this, we were trying to get the one fiber optic line in, and our goal was to, like, on days like this, be able to still call outside of Humboldt County, because on the old microwave the old microwave system, if the weather got too bad, you lost bandwidth, and sometimes we couldn't even call out, let alone, you know, get high-speed services. And now we're talking about, you know, connecting and to the across the Pacific, and our, you know, third big cable coming in and out over 299, and then, you know, people actually talking about high-end data services and servers and that sort of thing being located here. And so, you know, that's kind of exciting. It's a whole different kind of discussion from what we had before.
Does our climate allow that, Greg? I mean, you say high-end server, I'm thinking fog, I'm thinking salt in the air, I'm not thinking positive things regarding metal and machines and our climate. Does that still work, or is that stuff you can kind of design around?
Oh yeah, you can, you know, these things are pretty well, you know, are very much sealed up. And one of the things servers need, of course, is beyond the ability to move data out over large broadband pipes, is also they take, you know, a lot of energy, and they need to be cooled, right? And so in some ways we are a good climate for that, and our energy is relatively cheap here compared to some other areas, believe it or not. And of course our real estate is cheaper than trying to put one of these things in an urban area. So in fact, I think we are well suited for it, I'm kind of looking forward to hearing to more about it. I'm actually going to hear a presentation from one of the companies that's interested in this later this month. And you know, it used to be we would be talking about just trying to get, again, you know, simple what we would consider at the time broadband services to folks, and now we have people who are actually interested in coming here and talking about what we're doing.
And the energy consumption wouldn't cause issues when we're in those PG&E situations?
No. The nice thing is we're islanded now, so that's cool. But
okay.
But I, you know, they also have a lot of redundant power. You know, everybody will.
Everybody does. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
KINS.
It's
8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop vicariously with Greg Foster. I can say that before 9 o'clock, right?
Right. Yeah, you can. And I am showered and dressed.
So oh, good.
It's not like I'm sitting higher here in my bathroom at home.
No. Yes. or out tending cattle or anything along those lines.
No, nothing like that.
Yeah. So what kind of timeline are you looking at? Are you understanding that some of these projects will kind of really start to get some traction and some action?
Well, you know, a lot of them are in the permitting phase right now. I think, you know, and I may be speaking out of turn, but I think we'll see some real activity here in the next year or two, quite honestly. You know, there is, you know, some of this is being, and this is, you know, more broadly, you know, still affected by the pandemic and everything that's going on. But you know, I know that that they have a fairly aggressive timeline and are really interested and have the, you know, financial backing, and that's, you know, that's what's nice. I mean, we've had proposals before. I remember people coming in and saying, we're going to do this for you, and coming in with really slick proposals, and they say, oh, that sounds great. So what do you need? And they're like, well, we, you know, basically need you to pay for it. But these guys aren't doing that, and so that's the good news. I think we'll see it, you know, some activity, some projects happening within the next couple of years, at least. So
it's the delay.
And, you know, that's, Go ahead.
Is the delay because of not being able to get the hardware because of the manufacturing challenges that are going on, or is there just that much paperwork and studies and presentations and authorizations and permits and all that kind of
all
stuff
of that,
that's needed?
You know, I don't think it has to do with equipment. You know, for some of those, you know, the long cables, there's a lot of engineering, right?
Right.
I went to a presentation, you know, where they talked about, you know, and it's still amazing to me to think of a you know, fiber optic cable that extends across the Pacific Ocean. And, you know, they have to literally sink regeneration stations along the way and all this stuff. It's absolutely fascinating. So that project, you know, I'm not exactly sure that the project there, I know they're in negotiations or have signed agreements with the Harbor District. You know, I think about even just our cable that we worked on back 10 years ago for Highway 36. And there were a couple of issues there that slowed it down, you know, more than you would think. You'd think, oh, it's easy. You just take a fiber optic and string it along the poles. Well, you know, there's a lot of engineering around that. And there's a lot of legal issues in terms of rights of way, and you know, the installation on that project literally had to be done with helicopters in areas just because of accessibility, getting to the top of the towers, and you had to have very, very specialized installers doing it. You know, they were around the area a lot of because they had to work around.
So, are these folks then obviously need to have the service here? And then it goes to the Arcata location, and they take it over to the Valley, and then the Valley people take it elsewhere? Is that kind of the sequence that has to happen?
The people in Arcata are the people who are there's so many different players. So you got to think about the data center is actually different than the people who operate the broadband across 299. These are all different companies.
Okay.
But they're all used to working with each other. You know, in fact, you know, the cable that Highway 36 was, you know, just changed ownership, I think, twice now, but it's still chugging along.
Okay, so this is they're working in concert rather than sequentially.
They all need each other, right? And so, and the folks who are the last mile or the service providers, you know, the webs, you know, just. Simplest, the one we're probably most familiar with is, you know, the cable company or the internet hosting companies, ISP. You know, they can't do anything realistically without those bigger pipes in place. So, you know, those are going to be reliant on the bigger pipes. And this is what's one of the things that's important for us. And I know Connie over at Humboldt State again has been doing a lot of work with the PUC. Is to make sure that these cables have, for lack of a better term, off-ramps or on-ramps where local providers and local services can get access to them. Because theoretically it's possible that the fiber optic runs right through the community and doesn't benefit the community, right? The whole goal is to, you know, link, say, the Asia to the network in the United States, and it could go right through to us with a big switch over in the Valley. Well, you know, especially if there's public dollars involved, we want to make sure that there's a local benefit, the ability to access that, at the very least.
Right. Now, is there a large employment base associated with this, or is this like five people walking around in that entire compound just making sure that the dust mites don't take over?
No, I think it's more than that. And but the other thing, again, is that there's a lot of, again, using that word off-ramps or on-ramps, then there, you know, you can have spin-off businesses that are connected, right? And we lost, you know, this is the dark ages again, but when the AT&T, or back then, I think it was still Pac Bell, the SBC, talk about companies, changed a lot over the years. when we had the outages, back again before we built the 36 line, that affected people's ability to do business here.
Right.
And so certain services got moved out of the area. I can think of, you know, like healthcare, some of the services got moved out of the area because because they weren't being able to be relied upon here. And of course, that creates a chilling effect to anybody who relies on, you know, good, robust access to the internet to survive, to say, well, you know, we had 4 outages in a year. But other than that, you know, we're reliable. So.
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah.
You know,
that one makes sense. It's 8:30.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bayer Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:36. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Greg Foster, the Executive Director from REDEC. Sponsored this program along with CDH Painting, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, and Baywood Golf and Country Club. Okay, you got your radio voice on?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, well, I heard you clearing your throat there, so I figured, okay.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You are now ready. Ready for prime time.
I'm ready to go. Yeah.
Well, is there any development? Are you hearing any interest in the area around the airport, Greg? You know, there was an awful lot of excitement when that whole complex was developed, and then the federal courts building went in there, and the hotel kind of happened at about the same time, and there it sits. With some of the either the broadband stuff or folks associated with that, that literally could be anywhere. I would think that that would be prime location for folks that needed any of those amenities or just liked the view.
Right, right. And it's a gorgeous view. It's a great spot. So I think the airport, you know, it really is sort of can be a much stronger support mechanism for development around that area. And, that, you know, the airport's doing some great stuff right now. They're, you know, the big solar thing is going in. They're redoing their or updating their master development plan, and there's also a big study going on right now that will create a new leasing program. But they're, you know, the airport can't sell property, but they certainly can lease it. And once they have those, you know, all in place, and I think especially if we can get, you know, even more robust broadband network out there, there's a lot of, again, infrastructure to support that kind of development. And, you know, when you think about airport businesses, it's you know, they're sort of airport related, right, or airport dependent, but there's also what they call compatible, right? And so it could be almost any business as long as it's compatible with aviation.
Well, I would just think access, you know, if you got to fly out, okay, it's easier if you've got a 2-minute drive from the office instead of a 2-hour drive, as an example, or folks were coming in. You know, the consultant concept, but with a tech farm or something similar to that, with server farm or whatever you want, I would think that if there was going to be office space, boy, that would be the place.
Oh, I agree. I mean, again, you can't beat the view, but you also can't beat the access. And so I think that, you know, if we have a good leasing program there where people can lease lots, you know, and you can build the suit kind of stuff.
Now, is that the airport's property? When you're talking about leasing at the airport, are you talking about the industrial park or are you talking about on the footprint of the airport itself?
Both. You know, the airport footprint, you know, the airport is, you know, over 700 acres up there. And there is space there, you know, think about like where the animal shelter is, right? There's a lot of space down there. It's a nice road. And you can put, again, airport, you know, airport or aeronautically compatible businesses there. So I think the airport can do it. But I think, and can do certain things that would spur development across the street over in the industrial park, or the office park. you know, it's you can even put more tourist facilities over there. We only have one hotel right now. Interestingly, the airport owns a piece of property across the freeway, just at the terminus there, or by the Vista Point, just south of the Vista Point. And so you could even do tourism-based stuff there. So I think there's some creativity that can happen. This happens a lot in other airports. I mean, they have entire conferences now on commercial operations on airports. You know, the old model was, you know, you build an airport, you charge the airlines, you fly in and out, and sort of around there. But
yeah, I would think you'd miss a whole lot of opportunities if that was the sole focus of it.
Right. And so airports really now are almost like real estate companies in a way, but where they, you know, they get a bunch of land and they have a tremendous amount of leasing potential for people who want to be close to an airport. And, yeah, the newer airports, the larger ones, certainly are like shopping malls anymore. They got you in there, and these are all how they work themselves.
Yeah, I've often wondered, and I don't know if it's just me, but one of the things I enjoy doing at airports is the shopping, you know, once you get inside, looking around. Sure, I wonder if there's a model where that could be on the outside. So you'd have the bookstores, say, on the outside of the building rather than on the inside, so that the general public could access. I mean, where do you find a bookstore, you know, with new stuff anymore?
Right, you know, right.
A lot of areas is kind of tough to come by. So why not?
Airports are always looking for revenue. so who knows what you'll see in there?
Yeah. Once we see the noodle houses coming outside and working the curbside pickup, then we know we got something cooking. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time is 8:45. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Greg Foster from REDEC. Greg, what kind of year was it for the organization? Certainly a lot of challenges for your customer base.
Yeah.
What did you think about the year?
What's the word that they say? Interesting?
Yeah.
You know, it was funny because I was looking back. You know, I kept some notes, you know, I have some notepads on my desk, and looking at my notes from, you know, January and February and then March, and it was like, oh, wow. So, you know, we had to spin. And we started off with, you know, a pretty good year. The numbers were up at the airport, and we had loans in the pipeline, and we thought it was going to be a good year. And then the pandemic hit. But ultimately what ended up happening is, and we're a tiny organization, right? We have 3.5 people. We had a very busy year in the loan program, even outside everything else we've been doing. And you know, it wasn't just, we did about $750,000 in emergency loans that we pumped out really quick in March and April. And then since then, we've been actually working with companies, and we, you know, our most recent one that's been in the news is we worked with Redwood Capital Bank and BB&T to do the purchase of that old building down on Waterfront for the Dick Taylor chocolate expansion, a project we've been working with them on for quite a while. And so we've had a number of loans that were new businesses opening or some businesses expanding. The expansions tend to be, you know, those companies that are selling products or services outside the area, not entirely, but, and we've got four in the pipeline right now that are pretty good size, that are folks who are expanding or purchasing real estate, and so that's kind of exciting in a way. We didn't expect that necessarily. Our existing portfolio, we haven't had anybody who's like said they're going to permanently close. We have been offering loan payment deferrals for anybody basically that wants them in our portfolio. We got support from the federal government to do that, so, you know, keep our doors open. So, you know, overall, it was not a terrible year. I mean, that being said, you know, our businesses are, that our customers are working extremely hard, and they've been hurt, and we hope that, you know, that we can work with them and the other, you know, programs out there that have been providing relief. So the county put out about $3 million in grants to local businesses. There's a state grant program, which the deadline is for the first round. The deadline is tomorrow night, and I hope folks are taking advantage of that. And then the city of Eureka is also doing a program to provide some grant relief to Eureka businesses. So I think that's important. You know, I get really uncomfortable when we just keep saddling them with more and more debt.
Right. Well, and a lot of these are grants rather than loans, so that, or can morph into that, so that'll help
exactly.
out.
Exactly. Well, and the PPP program, which is the biggest one, you know, those loans are being forgiven now. That process is going on through the banks and others. And so, you know, those loans have been turned into basically grants, which is really helpful.
So the Dick Taylor references, go back to that. That's the old big green building down on First Street?
Where the co-op was going to be,
right?
And it's had a number of different businesses in there. That's very exciting. You're going to see some real activity down there here before too much longer, and they're going to build a beautiful facility.
Is that one going down and being new construction, or is it just going to be remodeled?
That building is going to be there. That's the bones. And it's a really neat building inside.
Yeah, it is. That's why I was hoping.
Old redwood construction. Yeah,
been through it a couple of times. Good. Yeah, except for that leveling thing. You know, it looked pretty good.
Well, they've done a lot of work on it already. The previous owners. So,
yes.
So it's ready to go, and we're very excited about that.
And speaking of going, so are we. Enjoy your afternoon in Ferndale, bud.
All right, you too.
Okay, see everybody tomorrow.